The UC Board of Regents is scheduled to meet this Wednesday and Thursday at UC Riverside. Busloads of students are expected to demonstrate to raise awareness about rising tuition fees and ongoing budget cuts. We hear a lot about the controversies surrounding the UC Board of Regents, but do you know who they are? How are they chosen? On today's Your Call, we'll spend the hour talking about the UC Board of Regents. Who holds them accountable? And what are their ties to corporate and banking interests? Tell us about privatization and the future of public education. What do you want to know about the UC Board of Regents? Join us after the news.
BBC News with Marion Marshall. Italy says it'll declare a state of emergency over the cruise liner lying capsized off the west coast and provide funding to help avert any environmental disaster. The Italian Environment Minister said liquid was leaking from the ship, Costa Concordia, but it was unclear whether it was fuel. Matthew Price sent this report from the nearby island of Giglio.
The Costa Concordia lies just metres outside the port of this picturesque island village. This morning, the vast, sorry hulk of this once luxury liner slipped slightly more beneath the surface of the choppy waves, shifting on the seabed. They abandoned the rescue effort for several hours. It was too dangerous to continue. As the weather worsens, there are concerns that the ship's fuel tanks may leak. They will try to siphon out the fuel later this week.
Following a weekend of violence that left three people dead and 40 injured, the Libyan authorities say they're preparing a force to disarm suspected Gaddafi loyalists still holding out against the new government. All efforts to broker a ceasefire in the 3 months since Colonel Gaddafi was captured and killed have failed. Our correspondent, Gabriel Gatehouse, reports from the hills outside the town of Gourian, about 80 kilometres from the capital, Tripoli.
In Libya's unfinished revolution, this is the new front line. Just 50 miles south of the capital, men who once called themselves rebels are back in position. Their target is the nearby town of Assabia, where they say heavily armed militias are still holding out in support of the old regime. At the weekend, military leaders and tribal elders gathered in Gharyam to try to negotiate a solution. But Jamal Belkhair, a local official, admitted that commanders are sometimes powerless to control their own revolutionary fighters.
Nigeria's trade unions have announced that they've suspended their week-long strike against the rise in fuel prices. The announcement followed talks over the weekend that led President Goodluck Jonathan to announce a cut in petrol prices. The union said they acted to save lives after receiving information that the security forces had been ordered to use all means to end protests. Many Nigerians are demanding a return to the original price of fuel, but the finance minister, Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, says the subsidy will inevitably be phased out.
The issue of full deregulation, there's no argument about it. We are going for full deregulation. The price of 97 naira has been announced, and Nigerians are accepting it. I think what they were upset about is the timing of that.
A United States senator who's been a supporter of sanctions against Burma has said he's impressed with the military-backed government's reforms, but that much remains to be done. The Republican leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, was speaking in Rangoon after talks with the pro-democracy leader, Aung San Suu Kyi. He'll meet President Thein Sein on Tuesday. You're listening to the latest world news from the BBC. The Pakistani Supreme Court has declared the Prime Minister Yusuf Raza Gilani could be in contempt of court for failing to reopen corruption cases against President Zardari and other politicians. The court has ordered the Prime Minister to appear before the bench this week. Ministers said the government respected the judiciary and that Mr. Gilani would attend the hearing on Thursday. In the United States, one of the six remaining contenders for the Republican presidential nomination, John Huntsman, has dropped out of the race. He's now endorsed the party's frontrunner, Mitt Romney. From Washington, Paul Adams.
John Huntsman bowed out with tough words on the state of the Republican primary campaign, which he said had degenerated into an onslaught of negative and personal attacks not worthy of the American people. He talked of what he called America's twin deficits, one economic, the other of trust, and said the toxic nature of the Republican debate did not help the party's cause. Mr. Huntsman hasn't really been the target of much of the campaign's evident rancour, but he's failed to make much of an impact, and his withdrawal is not entirely surprising.
Egypt has asked the International Monetary Fund for $3.2 billion in support. It turned down a similar package last June. Ongoing political instability has caused the economy to deteriorate, producing a growing budget deficit and currency pressures. Correspondents say many Egyptians are opposed to the IMF, seeing it as having previously imposed harsh conditions that benefited the rich more than the poor. A rubbish collector in southern China has been awarded the title of National Role Model after she helped a little girl who was run over last October and ignored by 18 passers-by. Chun Xian Mei tried to drag the child off the street after finding her lying bleeding and unconscious. The incident, captured on security cameras, prompted a public outcry about morality in China. The girl later died of her injuries. BBC News.
Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The UC Board of Regents is scheduled to meet at UC Riverside this Wednesday and Thursday. Busloads of students from UC campuses across the state are planning to travel to Riverside to continue their protests over fee hikes and cuts to higher education funding. In December, the UC Regents approved raises of between 6.5% and 23% for 12 highly ranked administrators and attorneys, most of whom earn more than $200,000 a year. And then there are the tuition fees. In the past decade alone, the UC system has seen a 342% increase in tuition and fees. The annual fees for attending a UC were $3,800 in 2001. Today, $13,000, and they're estimated to increase substantially over the next 4 years. So on today's Your Call, we are spending the hour talking about the UC Board of Regents. The regents are in charge of managing the UC system, but what does that mean exactly? Students, faculty, and staff say the regents have refused to engage in constructive dialogue with them about budget cuts and the future of higher education. Who sits on the board? Who holds them accountable? How are they investing billions of dollars of UC funds? And how transparent is their work? Peter Byrne spent 8 months investigating the UC Regents' investment deals. He argues that while it is true that the university's ties to corporate and banking interests are many, there's a special kind of privatization taking place behind closed doors. Peter Byrne is an award-winning investigative journalist, and his investigation is called Investors Club, How the UC Regents Spin Public Funds into Private Profit. And Peter joins us from Petaluma. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rose.
Good morning. We're also joined by Richard Walker, professor of geography at UC Berkeley and the vice chairman of the Berkeley Faculty Association. Professor Walker argues that the public university is becoming more privately funded as state support diminishes and students pick up more of the costs. Hi, Professor Walker. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Rose. Great to be here.
And we're also joined in studio by Charlie Eaton. Charlie is a sociology graduate student at UC Berkeley and leader of the UC Student Workers Union, UAW 2860. Hi, Charlie. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Rose.
So why don't we start off by talking about some very basics here. First off, Professor Walker, there are 18 current Board of Regents, 18 members?
No, there are 26, but that includes one student and seven ex officio, the governor, lieutenant governor, and so on, and then 18 appointed by the governor for 12-year terms.
And how many are active?
Well, the ex officio come and go. The regular ones tend to be active, but there's different degrees.
Okay, so 18 appointed.
Yeah.
And why don't you talk about their overall mission? What are they supposed to do?
Well, they are supposed to to sort of be the managerial overview of the university. We have a similar system at the CSUs. And these are citizens. It's written into the California Constitution to have citizens representing the wide spectrum of the people of California to see that the university is doing the is serving the public good. And of course, that's immediately violated because the distribution of these people is extremely elite and doesn't represent the people of California at all. But it's a layer of kind of insulation between the legislature and ordinary politics and the university, which in many ways is a good thing, because in states where they have the legislature directly over the university, you can get all kinds of strange doings on and interventions that are really inappropriate. So it can be a good system, but it isn't, because the current makeup of the regents does not represent the people of California.
And Peter, what would you add to that, just on that question? What are the regents supposed to do? What are they supposed to accomplish?
Well, the California State Constitution actually allows the University of California to be almost a sovereign state. It's not answerable to state government in many of its functions. And the Board of Regents is set up as kind of a government within a government. As Dick pointed out, unfortunately, most of its members have historically been political appointees, which means that there are, in the last 150 years since they've been around, they've almost exclusively been composed of bankers and industrialists and financiers and people with millions and millions and sometimes billions of dollars. And no expertise in education. There is rarely anybody that has any knowledge about education that is appointed to the Board of Regents.
Well, we can't obviously talk about all 18 of them, but Charlie, it's interesting. The students are spending a lot more time focused on the regents, especially over the last 2 or 3 months. So why don't you talk a little bit about the regents that really stand out for you?
Sure. Yeah. I think the big change with students is the old line was, don't cut us, don't raise our tuition. The new line is, who should pay? Should it be students and workers who have already paid way too much in tuition hikes and layoffs, or should it be bankers and millionaires? And it so happens that, you know, as your other guest just said, the regents really are the corporate and financial elite, bankers and millionaires of California. And some folks who stand out, for example, are Russell Gould, the former vice president of Wells Fargo and former president of Wachovia Bank, which he ran into bankruptcy. And
he was appointed by former Governor Schwarzenegger.
Correct. Monica Lozano, who is a board member of Bank of America. You know, Russell Gould is also on the board of the Chamber of Commerce in California. And he has, rather than represented the interests of students and workers in the university and done his part to get banks and corporations that have done very well to pay more in taxes to refund the University of California, he's devoted himself to opposing such tax initiatives. So what we're saying is we need folks on the Board of Regents who represent the rest of us, and that those folks on the Board of Regents who do, who are bankers, who are millionaires, they need to make a commitment, a pledge actually that we've asked them to make, that they will pay more and they'll work to get their peers to pay more in taxes.
Do you feel like any of the board members, the 18 that have been appointed, do you feel like any of them speak for you as a student?
You know, there is a student regent, and Alfredo Mireles, and he's certainly more in touch with the day-to-day needs of students, but it's just one person whose term is just a year. And it, on a board of 18, there's no way that you can expect somebody to move an ocean like that. We need we need board members, and there's some seats coming open. We need board members who aren't bankers, who aren't millionaires, that are in touch with California parents and students who want a quality, affordable higher education.
We asked Alfredo Mireles to come on today, and he wasn't able to. We also reached out to the UC Regents office in Berkeley, but they declined our request as well. Professor Walker, what about you? Who stands out for you?
Amongst the regents? Well, you know, they are not only financiers, as Charlie pointed out, but industrialists. You've got Sherry Lansing, who was the former CEO of Paramount Pictures and is on the board of Qualcomm, so representing technology. You've got Eddie Island, who's vice president of McDonnell Douglas. You've got Frederick Ruiz, who's a CEO and founder of Ruiz Foods. And these are big, you know, big California companies, big donors Usually most of them are appointed by Schwarzenegger, so big donors to his campaign. And that's how you get on the board, is you're an affiliate of a successful gubernatorial candidate.
Well, what kinds of decisions do they actually make? I mean, we heard about the salary raises that they approved in December, between 6.4% and 23% for 12 highly ranked administrators and attorneys. What other decisions have they made in the past few years?
Well, the way it works is that they appoint the president, and that's their guy. In this case, it's Mark Udoff. So when Dines was pushed out as president and Mark Udoff was appointed, that was engineered by the regents. Now, of course, there's committees with faculty members and so on, but in the end of the day, it's the regents. And the president is the day-to-day operating officer, CEO of UC, but he has to bring major policy moves to the regents. And by and large, they stamp what he says we should do. And I say he advisedly. So whether it's changes in the pension plan or it's these raises for certain select executives, that's brought forward by the president's office for their approval. Now, of course, they could overturn that, but it's rare that they do.
Peter, have we always had members of corporations on the Board of Regents? Has this always been the case?
Oh, yes, it's always been like that. Back when the university was created in the late 19th century, the state legislature actually was running it, and it was so instantly corrupted that the people passed a law creating the regents. However, that didn't actually get any better. And over the years, there's been many attempts to limit the conflicts of interest between the wealthy elite that runs the university and the use of the billions of dollars that funds the university. And they always get around it. You know, I mean, the latest iteration was a number of regents have substantial investments in private equity investment funds that are co-invested with the university. I was able to identify like $2 billion worth of overlap. And these are actually conflicts of interest under California state law and university regulations. But it would take a good deal of political will for them to be indicted. However, they are all indictable instances.
It goes back a long ways, Rose. In the 1870s, the Grangers, the farmers, were attacking the regents for selling off the land that had been given to set up the university and identified corruption there, which, by the way, the dean of Agriculture College, the first dean, supported the Grangers, and he got fired for this. And then by the turn of the century, it was Phoebe Hearst and the Hearst family who became the dominant force on the board, and she and President Benjamin Ide Wheeler pretty much ran the university for the first 20 years of the 20th century. And then that tradition was carried on by John Nylund, who was the lawyer for the Hearst family, and then Don McLaughlin after World War II, who ran Homestake Mining, which is a Hearst company, and was also head of the AEC and so on. So, Homestake Mining is a pretty big company. And then we also had people like Edwin Pauley. We have a Pauley Pavilion was the old basketball court at Cal and the Pauley Ballroom. And Pauley was called by Harold Ickes a bagman for the oil industry. So, you know, there's a long history of these guys being deeply embedded in business and bringing some of those business affairs into the university's operations.
Pauley was actually caught red-handed by the state auditor after the Regents funneled $10 million into one of his business deals. And that caused the state to actually pass conflict of interest laws that exist to this day.
Yeah, I have to mention one more thing on this before I let it go, because there is one instance of a president being forced out, and that was Clark Kerr, who is the author of the master plan, or at least oversaw the master plan, and was a noted kind of liberal of the time, a post-war era in the 50s and 60s. And when Reagan came in as governor, he brought in Glenn Campbell to be head of the Board of Regents. He was also the head of the Hoover Institute down at Stanford, a very right-wing think tank. And they also enlisted J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI to create a dossier on Kerr and so on to get him, and did. And that didn't come out till many years later. But so there's quite a bit of skullduggery can go on here.
You can say that, say the least. Peter Byrne, who holds the regents accountable?
Nobody.
Nobody. That's it.
Sorry. Like I said, they're basically a sovereign state within a state, and there's nobody, there's no electorate that can recall regents because they're not elected. The state legislature has only the power to confirm or withhold confirmation of a regent, which they actually do from time to time. So I suppose that there's a little bit of oversight there, and the legislature has to basically approve the budget. But basically, they, with the exception of Senator Leland Yee, for the most part, punt and allow the regents to run themselves. And of course, you know, the burning issue right now is that California is suffering because corporations don't pay hardly any taxes. The wealthy had their tax rates reduced by a couple percent, 15 years ago, and it's never been restored. And the people that are suffering are students and the elderly and the poor. And, you know, it's no surprise that the Chamber of Commerce is running the university in its own interest. And so ultimately, the only kind of accountability is going to have to come from people like Charlie organizing their fellow students to demand substantial change. I mean, we hear the cry, democratize the regents, when these scandals break out, and then it kind of dies down. But it's really a pretty good idea. I mean, if the regents were put to a statewide vote periodically, that could hold them accountable to some degree. I wouldn't say it's going to completely cure the situation, because look at the political system that we have. It's not cured by these weird elections that they have from time to time. But it would be a start. And aside from that, the state attorney general could hold them accountable by indicting them for conflicts of interest, misdemeanors and felonies of the nature of which I pointed out in my investigation last year. Local county prosecutors, maybe in Alameda County, could hold them accountable for various crimes and misdemeanors if it was to be so found. I mean, a prosecutor can not only indict a ham sandwich, he could indict a regent.
That is Peter Byrne. He spent 8 months investigating the UC Regents investment deals, and you can find his investigative piece, Investors Club, at yourcallradio.org. Richard Walker is professor of geography at UC Berkeley, and Charlie Eaton is a sociology grad student at UC Berkeley and leader of the UC Student Workers Union. And today we're talking about the UC Board of Regents. Who are they? What are they supposed to do? What are they supposed to accomplish? Who holds them accountable? Peter says no one does. What are your questions about the UC Board of Regents? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you've had any interactions with the board, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you're connected to the UC system, what are your thoughts about how this operates? You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And let's go to our first caller. Let's hear from Megan, who's a graduate student at UC Berkeley who participated in the protests last month. Hi, Megan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on the air.
Well, thanks for calling in. So why don't you talk a little bit about the UC Regents and students trying to reach out and have a dialogue with them?
Sure, I'd be glad to. So I've been involved in the student protests going back to the original round of cuts from the state government back in 2008-2009. And one of the things that I and a lot of my fellow instructors, because I teach at the university, I teach in the legal studies department as well as doing my own work as a PhD student, started to notice was that as we were being told the university was in desperate financial straits, that they needed to cut classes, there was an 8% cut in classes at Berkeley, at the same time we saw our class sizes go up. I've noticed for my students, increasingly, they work 6-8 hours a day. They're unable to meet with me in office hours and things like that just because they're struggling to such a great degree to be able to finance this education. As we noticed all of that, we also noticed that there were buildings going up on campus, and we read the stories in the SF Chronicle about increases and bonuses for executives, especially within UCSF and the hospital system. And I think a lot of people started asking questions of why is it that they've just announced that no one outside the major can take classes in Chinese, Japanese, or Korean, but we've just got a glamorous new East Asian Library, which is absolutely beautiful, by the way. And so the questions of, wait a second, we're being told on the one hand there are no resources, but resources seem to magically appear for certain other things. And that led a lot of us to ask questions about what the regions were doing and to start calls for democratization of the regions that weren't getting a whole lot of play in the press but have been there for several years. So when I was to fast forward to the most recent meeting, one of the things that most impressed me is I was in the room at UCSF Mission Bay, but there was a teleconferencing from around the state, and the story of that teleconference is actually an interesting one as well. And it was amazing how unified student and to a certain extent faculty voices were around the state in saying, you know, this isn't just about funding. This isn't just about the state. One, you, as the regents, in hiring Mark Udoff, in continuing to vote for wage increases and continuing to shift the burden of the cuts disproportionately onto students and workers, have made a very conscious decision about a model of university funding that looks more like privatization and have been doing so since 2004, and there's a compact they signed at the time. And two, you need to be our advocates. If you're going to tell us that the problem is in the state, all of you are politically connected individuals. You need to stand with us in going to the state and demanding the end of Prop 13, demanding a millionaire's tax, demanding new sources of funding for the university if the old ones are insufficient. And what we were told, I can let you get in, but we were told they looked somewhat cowed, but we're told, oh, you know, they gave us some vague promise of taking a tour of the various campuses, and they were clearly unaware that the student regent and student regent-elect had done exactly the same thing in the prior months and really gave us the same lame comments about going to Sacramento when, of course, these are a bunch of 19-year-olds holding 20-hour-a-week jobs and full-time students with no political clout whatsoever, being told by those with clout that somehow it's our responsibility to be advocates for the university system.
And have any of them actually met with you and other students?
I think actually Charlie can speak to this. I believe one or two have. They've also refused to meet with us and refused quite publicly. There were, I think, dozens of students actually arrested at a Bank of America branch because Monica, and I'm blanking on her last name, but one of the regents actually refused to meet with students there and actually called the police to have these students and workers arrested. So there's been a mixture of things, and certainly none of these meetings have produced any kind of assurances or openness to changing the way business is done within the UC system.
Well, Megan, thanks so much for calling in.
Okay.
Thank you. That's Megan. She's a graduate student at UC Berkeley who participated in the protest last month. Charlie, what can you tell us about whether or not, or the interactions that students have had with the UC Board of Regents?
The conversation has changed remarkably because of students in the streets to hold regents accountable by the only means we have available to us, which is public protest and civil disobedience. I met with a top staff member for a regent in December who told me that regent, one of the ex officio officers, had asked the regents to support new taxes publicly back in the summer of 2011 during the budget fight, and that categorically every regent, President Udoff, all said it was totally off the table, wouldn't even have a conversation. Today, some of the regents are now actively talking about supporting taxes, new taxes to support UC. But I think Megan makes a really good point that even though it really is Wall Street, it really is millionaires that need to pay more to fund the university, we're going to have a very hard time putting the kind of pressure on Wall Street and on millionaires to pay more in taxes if people don't see that their money, the money that we're reclaiming from those banks and millionaires, is going to good use at the university. If it's going to executive pay hikes, people aren't going to stand with us. The people of California aren't going to stand with us to say, you know what, Bank of America and Wells Fargo need to pay more. And they do need to pay more. They paid 0%, both of those companies, which are both represented on the Board of Regents, paid 0% in net taxes in 2010. That's untenable when students have faced essentially a 300% tax increase on us with tuition hikes.
In the year 2001, students paid almost $4,000 to attend a UC, and now they're paying just over $13,000. That is a huge increase just in 10 years, and that's expected to increase substantially within the next 4 years. We're going to take a short break here, and if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions about the UC Board of Regents and how they operate, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you're tied to the UC system or if you have any experience with the UC board, you can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this.
Every week, 10,000 listeners tune to KALW, but not at 91.7 FM, via our online stream at klw.org. So if you travel outside the Bay Area or sometimes encounter the limits of our signal, the online stream is a great way to stay connected. If you have a smartphone, you can listen on your iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry. Just click the Listen Live link at the top of klw.org, and you'll see all the options.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show at yourcallradio.org. That's our new website where you can also leave a comment about the UC Board of Regents. You can also find out through signing up for our newsletter what's coming up. Tomorrow we'll have a conversation about what the income gap tells us about what has or has not changed since Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. We'll have a conversation about the economic realities of white, black, and brown Americans. On Wednesday, we will air California Governor Jerry Brown's State of the State address, and then we'll open up the lines to hear your take on the state of California. We're also putting together a show about the state of reproductive rights in the United States. Today, we are talking about the UC Board of Regents. They are scheduled to meet at UC Riverside this Wednesday and Thursday. Busloads of students from UC campuses are planning to travel to Riverside to continue their protests over fee hikes and ongoing cuts to higher education funding. And if you'd like to, if you have a question about the UC Board of Regents, who are they and what are they doing behind the scenes? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Their overall mission is to manage the UC's 10 campuses. So how does that actually work? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Peter Byrne. He spent 8 months investigating the UC Regents investment deal. You can read his piece, Investors Club, at our website. Richard Walker is professor of geography at UC Berkeley and the vice chair of the Berkeley Faculty Association. And Charlie Eaton is a sociology graduate student at UC Berkeley and leader of the UC Student Workers Union, UAW 2865. And we've got full lines, so let's take a few calls and then we will get responses from our guests. Let's hear from Hal in Berkeley. Hi, Hal. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I used to run the UC Regents selection program at UC Berkeley for a number of years, and during the process I learned quite a bit about the control that the Regents exert over that student Regent selection, kind of in the same vein as other anti-democratic things. They, for example, the existence of that student Regent position has to be renewed every few years because it's not permanently built into the rules. And the regents actually select the student regent. Students forward a number of finalists, but it's actually the regents that control the selection. And finally, when they do that selection, they put very great stress on the fact that that student regent may not represent the students, because they say that, like all other regents, he must represent the entire state population of the state of California, which doesn't seem to be a criteria that they apply very equally to the other regents.
Well, thank you for the call. We'll get a comment in just a minute. Let's hear from Steve in San Francisco. Hi, Steve.
One of the things on Martin Luther King's holiday that we should recognize is that the number of Latino and black students at the university is declining, and this is a direct cause of the privatization and corporatization of it. Gray Brecken has also spoken about the corporate domination and corruption of the university, and actually he's going to be speaking this coming Sunday at Laney College, where there's going to be a conference on the attack on public education and the privatization. United Public Workers for Action, upwa.info, is going to have the conference, and we'll be streaming it live as well. But one of the things I think that's critical is that the Democratic Party and Jerry Brown, these Democrats, are shielding basically this illegal activity that Peter Byrne is talking about. When they transfer money and have conflicts of interest, they need to be prosecuted. And Kamala Harris, the state attorney general, former district attorney in San Francisco, has been appealed to. His letters have been sent to her. She doesn't respond to the letters. Why isn't she investigating? Why isn't she prosecuting? Because what we have is systemic corruption and stealing of public money, public resources, for private interests at the University of California. Richard Blum, who has a big building at UC campus, was the chair of the Regents Investment Committee. He was moving money around. You have John L. Burton, who is the chair of the Democratic Party, who's on the University of Phoenix, where they're pushing online education and sending federal money to this. And Nancy Pelosi is preventing real oversight of these private for-profit schools. So the people who are running the University of California, these regents, are actually destroying public education and turning it into a private operation and directing public money towards these private universities and their private businesses, including biotech in San Francisco. They have a lot of money, for example, in San Francisco for Mission Bay, but they're attacking the workers, AFSCME and other workers, cutting their pensions, cutting their benefits, and basically the privateers, corporations, have taken over the university, and it's illegal under California law, and that's something that politically the unions have to start to address. These attorney generals and government officials need to prosecute, and if they don't, they're obstructing justice.
Well, Steve, thank you for calling in, and we'll get Peter to talk about Richard Blum in just a minute. We'll just take a few more calls. Let's hear from Ede in Berkeley. Hi, Ede.
Hi, good morning. My question actually was to single Richard Blum for what he had done to University of California. I'd just like to say very briefly that while I was student, grad student for a long time, from the mid-60s up to mid-70s, it was free. The university was free. As I've stated myself, I was paying $500 a semester.
Wow.
But as part, the whole part is, you cannot rule an educated society. So what you do is destroy the educated system. But I want your guests to really pay attention to Richard Blum, who is the husband of Dianne Feinstein, how much money he swindled the University of California in bad investments through his investing firm. And also, he has conflict of interest, huge conflict of interest, and shame on UC for building a building after him for whatever reason that is totally anti-student, anti-education, anti-American.
Thank you for calling in, and we've got a number of emails about Richard Blum. So, Peter, why don't you talk about Richard Blum and conflicts, but potential conflicts of interest?
Well, of course, Mr. Blum is the husband of California U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein, and as has been reported in the past, there's been multiple conflicts of interest between Feinstein's actions as a senator and her family's business interests. However, in terms of the regents, I was able to show that over since Blum was appointed by Governor Gray Davis in 2003, that the regents invested $748 million, that's $750 million, in seven private equity deals in which Blum Capital Partners was a major investor. They invested $84 million in real estate and private equity deals in which Mr. Blum held significant interests. They invested $42 million in a buyout of Glenboro Realty Trust, a company in which Mr. Blum was on the board of directors and a major stockholder. They invested $53 million in two for-profit college corporations that are largely owned by Blum Capital Partners. They've got $1 billion in Career Education Corporation and ITT Educational Corporation. And they put $304 million in 18 public companies as of 2009, in which Blum Capital Partners held a controlling stake. Now, that's just Mr. Blum. The governor is also Governor Schwarzenegger. Ex-Governor Schwarzenegger was also on the investment committee, and the committee under Mr. Blum and
Governor Schwarzenegger's business partner, a man named Paul Walker, who's also a junk bond specialist like Mr. Blum is, allowed the regions to invest $411 million in Dimensional Fund Advisors, which is a company in which both the governor and Mr. Walker had ownership stakes, not just stock, but actual ownership stakes. The regions invested $75 million in private equity deals in which Mr. Walker and Governor Schwarzenegger had private ownership stakes. And Regent Lansing, who is now the chairperson of the regions and sits on the investment committee now, is on the board of Qualcomm Corporation, which pays her about $500,000 a year in fees. And after she joined the board, UC upped its quadrupled its investment in Qualcomm to nearly $400 million. Now, I want to break some news here. I got recently some documents from the UC because I had asked them how much they're paying in fees to private equity firms in which they're invested. Private equity firms are a really bad investment for UC, and under Mr. Blum and Mr. Walker over the past few years, the university tripled its investment to close to $7 billion in 10% of the entire $70 billion investment portfolio into these very, very risky junk bond type of operations of the sort run by Bain Capital, which has been criticized, you know, by Mitt Romney, his opponents. Anyway, I was able to find out just by reading their spreadsheet that in 2008, the university paid $64 million to private equity firms just because they to manage the investments that the university had put into these firms. They have like 200. They have about $7 billion worth of investments in private equity firms, and they not only don't get a very good return, but they actually pay a yearly fee to these private firms to manage the investments. Now, Bain Capital has a sister company that actually was hired by the university to consult on cutting back the budget at UC over the past few years. They paid them at least $3 million to engineer the cutbacks that we're now seeing. And I happen to notice on this list that the university has invested in seven of Bain Capital's private equity junk bond funds to the tune of $300 million. And every year, not only do they get a fairly substandard return from this investment, but they're paying a fee to Bain Capital of $1.6 million, which means that not only are they not getting a very good return, Bain Capital is getting a great return from having the university lose its money.
And Peter, you know? Professor Walker really wants to get in on this. So, Professor Walker, why don't you jump in?
Which is good, by the way, for Mitt Romney, former head of Bain Capital. Yeah, I wanted to answer the various callers. The first one was mentioning the student regents. And I mean, it's obviously ridiculous. It was a battle 30 years ago to get a student regent at all, and it hardly makes a difference. Now, students are now paying more in tuition than the state is paying to the university. So my view is the students ought to have at least half the regents. And you want to change representation here. You want to represent who's paying. Why not do that? I mean, the students have a very strong case to make. The second caller talked about the decline in the numbers of Latino and African-American mm-hmm. students. And, of course, that goes back to the anti-affirmative action movement of the 1990s, Prop 209 and all that, which, by the way, was led by a UC regent named Ward Connerly, who was a black businessman who'd made his money as ironically, as an affirmative action contractor at the state of California, and was appointed by Pete Wilson, a Republican, and went on, of course, lead this anti-affirmative action movement around the country. So there are various kinds of evil you can identify here amongst the regents. But finally, I want to come back to, while I think the stories of conflict of interest are extremely important and should be, you know, I'm very thankful to Peter for the work he's done. I think we're dealing with a larger issue of a kind of plutocracy here. This is what the Occupy movement has identified, I think, so has been so valuable for Americans to start talking about the 1%. These guys are all the 1%. Guys and gals are the part of the plutocracy. And They don't represent the people of California. They are sitting on bags of money gotten in various ways, legitimate and illegitimate. And to expect them to represent public education and the people of California is a stretch in the best of times.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've often made the analogy that it's actually in some, I mean, occupy the plutocrats, it's fine. But here we are, we're placing $70 billion in front of these people whose job is to invest money in the interest of themselves and their friends. And I've made the analogy that that's like putting a plate of raw hamburger in front of a bunch of feral cats. It's in their nature to eat it. It's crazy to put these people in charge of public funds. And I completely concur with what Professor Walker is saying here. I mean, yes, at least 50% of the region should be students and workers. And why have business in there at all?
We have an email from Cynthia who says it's time to take the University of California back. Nothing less than our free-thinking democratic society is at stake. So, Charlie, the students are really putting the pressure on and raising awareness about what's really happening. What is your game plan?
Well, there is, there are some conversations that have been going on for a couple years about real regent reform proposals to get regents who represent all Californians, including students, workers, faculty at the university, and parents throughout the state.
And who's in charge of implementing those reforms?
Well, it would take legislative action by the legislature, including a potentially constitutional amendment. As we've heard, it really is going to take people in the streets to make this happen. And a little bit more about that as the game plan. So I want to touch on Dick Bloom as a way to get into the game plan, because shame on us for not saying more about him earlier, as your callers have said. So Dick Bloom is the chair of the largest commercial real estate corporation in the world. And he's got these conflict of interests, but also, the way Dick Bloom has made his fortune, along with other commercial real estate barons in California, is he's paid below market value property taxes in California since Prop 13 created a loophole. So what would do more to close that corporate property tax loophole in California? Jerry Brown coming out in support of it, or Dick Bloom coming out in support of it? I would argue that if Dick Bloom were to come out and say, you know what, I and my peers in the corporate real estate world need to pay the real value of pay taxes on the real value of our corporate property tax holdings, that would do a lot more to shake up the politics of taxes in California, to make it possible to get a fix through the legislature or on the ballot to things like that, or to get the millionaires tax passed. Republicans in Sacramento who block tax increases are blocking tax increases at the behest of the Chamber of Commerce. If UC Regent Russell Gould on the Chamber of Commerce board really pushed for the Chamber of Commerce to back new taxes on millionaires in California to fund UC, I think it would go farther than Jerry Brown doing that. And so that's really where our, going forward, where our focus is. That's why students are going to be protesting this Thursday at the Board of Regents meeting in Riverside. And we also are going to go to Sacramento, where there's going to be a week of action March 1st. There will be actions on campuses. And then on March 5th, tens of thousands of students and workers and teachers are going to march in Sacramento and occupy the Capitol. And the message is going to be, look, politicians here in Sacramento, you need to stand with us to make banks and corporations and millionaires pay. You need to be on our side in this, because they're the folks who have to pay. And I wouldn't be surprised if we have some actions at the California Bankers Association headquarters, at the Chamber of Commerce headquarters in Sacramento on that March 5th date, because what we want to reveal is the way that these corporations and millionaires pull the strings in Sacramento, whether it's with Democrats or Republicans.
And Professor Walker, do you know what's on the agenda for this week's meeting at Riverside?
Well, no, I don't think we know yet. I mean, they had put off the a possible four-year 80% further increase in tuition.
80%?
Over 4 years. So they might come back with that, depending, since the state budget is once again taking a big hit and UC is taking a big hit, they may well come back with that. So it could be a very lively time this coming year.
They are going to be talking about what they call revenue solutions on Thursday, but they're really not solutions. It's more private fundraising initiatives to generate revenue for the university, which has a corrosive effect. The more you rely on private funding, the less accountable you are to students and parents and workers.
Exactly. And actually, it's just a fancy name for charity. Mm-hmm. You know, the rich who you don't tax, you then, because you don't tax them, you don't have public funds. So then you go hat in hand to the rich and say, please give us money for a building or for grants or whatever it is. And that's called charity. And I don't think Americans like charity. I think the democratic thing is proportional taxation, which we've gotten away from in this country and in this state. And that's what we need to do. And there are going to be propositions coming up on the fall ballot. There's
right.
going to be signature campaigns to try and get a millionaire's tax. Governor Brown has his own solution, but his solution leaves UC out. Leaves higher education out, and it's based on a sales tax, which is the worst, most regressive tax possible, and people are sick of paying those sales taxes. It has to be a progressive taxation, and that's what the millionaire's tax is about, is restoring progressive taxation, which is an old, honorable idea in America.
Well, there's a petition being circulated around the state right now to tax windfall oil and energy profits and put the money into education, and it even has a clause in it that would prohibit the energy companies from passing the increased taxes they have to pay onto the consumer in the forms of higher gasoline costs.
We have a lengthy email from Catherine Klar, who's a lecturer at UC Berkeley, and it's detailed about Peter Burns' investigative reporting. She writes a lot about Richard Blum, but I think the last part of her article really says it all. She says, I'm retiring from UC as of June 29th this year. It's several years earlier than I had intended, but I can no longer take working full-time for an institution whose goal is no longer education in the long critical tradition, but job training for the 21st century equivalent of serfdom, and which in the process is ensuring such a workforce by indenturing most students to 10 or 20 years of servitude to pay off their, quote, financial aid. The syndicate gets their money and the best years of their lives. Who knows what, if anything, they will end up with. The social implications 20 or 30 years down the road are disturbing. She writes, UC is a, quote, company town with all that this implies. The regents are the barons. The people of California, especially its youngest and brightest, are the serfs.
Well, I do want to speak to the student debt issue that Catherine points out there. That's a very powerful statement, Catherine, by the way. Well done. And what has happened with the general tenor of American life is financialization. And so what's happening to students is what happened to homeowners. That is the idea that you can't pay, so we'll lend you the money. You can't pay because average salaries in America have gone nowhere for 40 years. So most normal average people, ordinary working people, can't really afford these houses with real estate values going up and up and up. So they get into debt, and they get all this loose finance to get them into debt, and then they end up foreclosed. Well, the same thing's happening with student debt. Oh, well, you know what? We can't afford to invest in students, which is what society should be doing, investing in the young through public education. That's the meaning of public education. Instead saying, oh, you have to pay because it's a private good, but we'll lend you a whole lot of money. And, of course, people get into trouble, and you end up with the same crazy, dysfunctional model that we had for housing.
Well, but it's a great business model because those student loans, even when they default, are covered by the taxpayer.
This is also tied really directly to the decline in enrollment by students of color in the University of California. There are a number of folks who are liberal faculty, liberal folks in the university, who think part of the solution to our problem is to use the tuition revenue that we get to provide more financial aid to low-income students and to students of color. The problem is we've been doing that the last 10 years, and as we've seen enrollment by students of color just enroll more decline more and more, to the point where we now have lower African American enrollment than before the civil rights movement. It's not a fix to just move the shells around in the shell game with financial aid. We have to make the university affordable and accessible for everyone again. It's the only way to make sure that all students, including students of color, have access to a great, affordable education at UC.
And I think important point here is that people think, oh, if we lower tuition, we're giving them something for free. That's exactly the point. It's an investment in the young. It's just like a kindergarten, public elementary schools. It's the same principle. And it's a great principle, and California became great based on that principle, and it's been taken away from us, and we need to get it back.
Civilized countries around the world, university education is free.
It's still free. Well, we have time for one more caller, and then we'll get final thoughts. Let's hear from Roger in Oakland. Hi, Roger.
Hello. About a year and a half ago, I read an article in San Francisco Magazine about Mark Udoff's new presidency. And the article said, among other many other things, it said that construction on the UC Berkeley campus was being funded by the sale of construction bonds. And the construction bonds were being repaid through a revenue stream called tuition. And I'd like to hear more about that. I haven't heard much about it. I just read that one statement, and I'd like to hear more about that.
All right, quick response, anyone? Professor Walker?
It's true. It's true. When they went to the Wall Street market, they pledged the increases in tuition as collateral for their bonds to build these new buildings that they wanted.
Yeah, just another angle on that whole debt-fueled kind of economy.
So where does this go from here? Peter, final thoughts from you?
I urge the students to do exactly what Charles says and take to the streets and don't back down until there's substantial change and the whole region system is completely democratized. And while you're at it, overthrow the state legislature.
Professor Walker?
Well, I want to reiterate what a great, brilliant institution UC is and the higher education and the public education system in California has been. And we're letting it go to hell in a handbasket, and we need to get it back. And I think we can do that. It's not that expensive, actually. The Faculty Association worked out that your median taxpayer with any kind of tax to support UC would cost about $50 a year. Now, for millionaires, it would cost a few thousand, but they can well afford that. So I think people shouldn't be afraid of the idea of taxation to support this wonderful cause. And I think we could do it. We've been convinced that somehow it's not possible. It's absolutely possible. We can do it, and we can restore the greatness of UC.
And Charlie Eaton, 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think folks should visit makebankspaycalifornia.org. They can see the Refund California, which is one of our big student faculty worker coalitions. They can see our Refund California pledge that has a whole set of real concrete alternatives for making banks and millionaires pay to refund California and to fund the kind of aspirations for a bottom-up university with smaller class sizes and a real chance for everyone.
That's makebankspaycalifornia.org. And again, the UC Board of Regents is meeting this Wednesday and Thursday at UC Riverside, and busloads of students from UC campuses are expected to attend to protest over fee hikes and cuts to higher education funding. Charlie Eaton is a sociology grad student at UC Berkeley. Richard Walker is professor of geography at UC Berkeley. And Peter Byrne is an investigative journalist. He spent 8 months taking a look at the UC Regents investment deals. Check his article at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call, and here's what's coming up tomorrow. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor, and Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Debbie Kennedy is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.